coming up on the local news hour this morning. I'll be checking in with State Representative Logan Wild. We'll be talking about his new appointment to the Utah Department of Agriculture and Food. Of course, a pending state approval, as well as a look back at this year's legislative session. Summit County Justice Court Judge Shauna Kerr has details on how the administrative order is impacting the local court system. And Summit County Council candidates for Seat A, incumbent Roger Armstrong and Jill Thello, will be discussing their reasons for running for office. Again, as we've been reporting, that race could be decided as of next week. Stay tuned. 8:16 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, as we have reported, State Representative Logan Wild, who serves the citizens of District 53, has been nominated by Utah Governor Gary Herbert to head up the Utah Department of Agriculture and Food. Logan joins me now on the phone to tell us what the job entails and whether that means he drops out of his bid for re-election. Good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you, Leslie?
I'm doing great. Thank you. So your nomination to the Department of Agriculture and Food must be confirmed by the Utah Senate. When is that supposed to happen?
That'll happen sometime in May is what that's what I've been told.
Okay, so is that a special session then? Is that what happens?
Yeah. No, they will do it during the interim. The Senate convenes during the interim so that they can get appointments done.
Okay, so if in fact you are confirmed, what does that mean for your reelection campaign?
So what is my reelection campaign? I have to drop out of the race. You cannot be a cabinet member and also in the legislature. That goes against the state constitution. So I'm in the process of filing all those papers right now to drop out. I think I have one more thing to get my name off the ballot.
Okay. If you delayed that nomination, that would allow then the Republican Party to pick their own candidate, no? But that's not...
No, it wouldn't. No, because this appointment does not qualify just like a lieutenant governor's appointment does. This would actually fall right to the Democrats or the people that are there.
All right. So will you be endorsing one of the other two Republicans, Kara Berkland from Morgan or Talladere from Francis?
You know, I think both of them are great candidates. I am not looking to endorse anybody right now. I think they're both qualified candidates. I kind of, you know, have to keep the powder dry. So.
All right. So you'll just wait until the convention process goes through.
Right.
And yeah.
Yep.
So you'll be endorsing the Republican. Let's put it that way.
Yes, endorse the Republican.
Right, who would take on Cheryl Butler in the election.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure I can... I'm not sure I can even endorse even the Republican at this time or not. I know a lot of times cabinet positions have to stay politically neutral, and that's kind of what I've been told, but I have not seen that on paper yet.
Okay. So tell us about the new position. What does the Commissioner of Agriculture and Food do?
So there's they do all the regulations for agriculture, food. They do weights and measurements, much like they test and regulate how much gas is coming into your gas pump so that your price per gallon is what the pump says. They also do seed inspection so that the seeds that we're planting in the ground are what people are saying they are. Those are the kinds of things that we do. I know yesterday we were dealing with food inspections at the Department of Ag and trying to make sure that we can keep food inspections going during this time of crisis and what that entail, especially if we do get one or two people sick. We're still going to need to make sure that the inspection of food, safe food, is happening. And so we're coming up with plans, making sure that those are in place if that happens.
Yeah. So at what level is that? I mean, at what point does it become the county health department to do food inspection?
It never does. The role comes from the there's a federal side and then there's a state side to this. And the county health department does weigh in on food inspections, but they do not take over any of the roles of food inspections.
So are you looking at grocery stores or the takeout restaurants?
We look at the food that's coming into grocery stores. So grocery stores That would be at a county health level. But the food that's coming in, transported in, whether it's vegetables, making sure that the vegetables meet certain criteria, whether the meat that, right now we don't want any sort of outbreak. And so we're just trying our really hardest to make sure that everything's in a good place.
All right. How big of a staff do you have?
My understanding, there's over 100 people that work for the Department of Ag.
All right. So you'll oversee basically them, huh?
Yes.
All right.
Everything from conservation to, food inspection to, there's a lot to that department that I'm still learning.
Yeah. Why was it something you were interested in doing?
Right now, I think we need a centralized voice for agriculture in the state. I know that we definitely need to make sure that we have a stable voice as well right now, that people don't panic. You've seen a little bit of panic with people going out and just buying and hoarding food. We're looking to make sure that we have that ample food coming into the state, even the producers that are here in the state. And I really think this is a role that I can participate in and do well moving forward.
So, I mean, this is a position, it sounds like, that serves at the pleasure of the governor. And since the governor is out of office as of the end of the year, does that mean that your appointment is at risk?
The appointment is at risk. I could be out at the end of the year, or it depends maybe whether the new governor will pick me up or not. That I have not really kind of looking at that right now. I'm trying to get everything right now on the ground and making sure that we have the plans in place so that we can protect the public.
All right. And does this mean that you commute to Salt Lake City every day?
I do. I commute. That's a little bit longer than just going across the street to the ranch, but it is, it's a little bit longer commute.
All right. Hey, let's take a look back at the legislative session, the land use bill that got Summit County officials up in alarm. Was that tamed back then and approved?
Yeah, that was tamed back and approved. So what happened is Summit County has an attorney that works on the land use task force during the summer, and she was able to come in with some of the things that was concerning to Summit County, and was able to work through those, and we've implemented those into this bill so that we weren't overstepping, hurting any community in the state.
Okay. And tell me where this came from. I mean, the idea that, we could just kind of erase subdivision lines. What? Why?
Okay. So what happens is there's a task force that it's kind of a voluntary task force that gets together every summer that talks about land use issues in the community. Some of these issues come from what happens in the court. Some of them come because county planners, city planners go, "Well, this isn't working for our community," and so they take their ideas to this task force, and the task force kind of works them out. But then we need a broad picture of people to weigh in on it. So like the subdivision, what happened is there was a subdivision on the Wasatch Front that the landowners had tried to move property lines within the subdivision. And the question had come back because of the rules that are at the state and the rules that are at a local level, that would they have to redo the whole subdivision or just the line between the two property owners? And we don't want to go in and affect everybody that's in that subdivision. We only want, if there's a property line that needs to be adjusted, we want to affect just that property line, just keep that very minimal. And so the Land Use Task Force took that together, and they kind of worked out an agreement and made it so that it was kind of a simpler process. The counties and cities were very happy with it.
All right. The legislature, of course, repealing the new tax law the second day of the session.
Mm-hmm.
This was a law that you did vote in favor of. Where do you think tax reform is, what it'll look like going forward?
I think we saw a little bit of tax reform come out. I know it's going to go to the vote of the people, and they're going to put it forward. I think they're going to have to do something with tax reform in the future. I think it'll probably be a much smaller step. As they look forward, I think you you eat an elephant one bite at a time instead of trying to take the whole thing. And what I see happening is they'll be doing little pieces here and there and trying to get the public to weigh in on it so that the public has input. Much like what we're doing right now with the state constitution and changing, allowing for children and disabled to be included into the income tax.
And then wanted to ask you also about this push that we seem to see on predator bills this year. There were a couple of control bills and resolutions giving ranchers and farmers more leeway to hunt cougar and bear. That was the Casey Snyder bill. And then a second bill by Carl Albrecht that passed requiring the experts at the Division of Wildlife Resources to increase the predator permits when ungulate populations drop to a fixed size. Why this push, you think, on these predator bills?
So one thing, so there's two different issues that are pushing it. One is when you start talking about your ungulate, your deer population has us very concerned in the state of Utah and how we're seeing a decrease in deer populations across the state of Utah. And what we don't want to do is put our deer population at risk. But at the same time, we're seeing a very big explosion of predators. Now, that is not the only thing that is affecting deer population. This is all we did was make some tools for the department or Division of Wildlife resources to go in and actually manage. We did not take away the public input. We did not take away any of those inherent things that help protect predation as well. But at the same time, we're just seeing a huge predator increase within the state. I mean, if you saw on KSL, there was article after article after article about predators, large predators down in the Wasatch Front, affecting not just livestock, but also the deer populations that are there. And we were trying to come up with some management tools for the DNR. On the other side, we saw Casey Snyder. He proposed a bill that would allow for depredation to go longer than the 24-hour period that had previously been in statute. A lot of times what we find in the summertime is that because there's nothing to track them, the scent goes away. If we have predation that's happening from a large animal, we're having a harder time finding that predation within the amount of time of 24 hours. What we can do is because you have to have a biologist come up and identify that it was a cougar or a bear or something of that nature. And then you're going to have to file the proper paperwork. Well, by the time that happens, a lot of times that predation period has lapsed. And so what we're saying is let's push this back to a 72-hour, which is a 3-day period, and that should give us plenty of time to identify and go move forward with the predation there.
All right, Logan, anything else that you wanted to mention?
No, I'm just really happy to be serving the state of Utah, and I look forward to this new position. I appreciate what you guys are doing up there. I listen to KCPW frequently when I'm here in Croydon, so I appreciate what you guys are doing for the community. Well, thank you very much, Leslie.
Yeah, thank you. That's State Representative Logan Wild again, who has been nominated to serve as the Utah Department of Agriculture and Food Commissioner. That, again, nomination would need to be confirmed by the Utah Senate, that happening in interim session in May. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:30. Well, earlier this month, Summit County's Justice Court announced that it would be postponing hearings until April due to the COVID-19 disease. On the phone with an update of how that is impacting the number of cases is Summit County Justice Court Judge Shauna Kerr. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So with the stay-at-home order now in place, will this postponement of hearings continue through April?
Well, there's been a substantial change in that April date based on a pandemic order issued by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court dated March 21st, which basically changed those dates that we had pushed things back from April into May The new order basically says anything that is a traffic hearing or trial move back till after October 1st. Anything that is a criminal matter where the defendant is not in custody, move those hearings, trials, until after June 1st. So after we issued that order last week, then the Supreme Court issued this, and so we have then changed all of our hearings. Now, what I want to make sure everyone understands is the court is open and operational. This just means that we are not going to have public hearings, trials, jury trials. We are no longer, during this pandemic, having roll call hearings like an arraignment where we'd have 20, 30, 40 folks in the courtroom at one time. We are open. We are hoping to see folks that are in custody or emergency hearings like domestic violence, any of those kind of orders, video conferencing, and we will be available via phone, and there also is online ability to make payments.
Okay. People can get their questions answered by calling the court, and the number I have is 435-615-3802.
3800 would be the best number at this point, and then it'll put them into a system that can answer some questions, and then 3802 will result in answering with a live clerk there at the office.
Okay.
One thing, Leslie, that I did want people to understand is that we appreciate the difficulty that this has put upon everyone. There still are a right to a speedy trial. The speedy trial is kind of a different definition under a pandemic situation. So we will, if there are issues that need immediate attention, I am happy to go in and see those as long as we can do the proper distancing and keep safe protocols. Those folks that are arrested, I still review everything every day several times. If they come into the jail, I can see them with a video before they're even booked to set bail or to release them. So I've confirmed with the jail that they're currently not holding any misdemeanor defendants in custody.
So for people that thought they should be appearing in court, what does this mean? I mean, well, they'll receive some notice from the court with a new date,
right?
Or
We've asked everyone for their address, including email address and a physical address. The clerks have emailed and mailed notices of updated hearing dates, changing all these dates and pushing them back. But if anyone has any questions, please call our clerks, because we're happy to help you understand what we need. And then in many matters, Leslie, you can pay the ticket online, for example, a speeding ticket, a failure to stop at a stop sign. There's a standard bail schedule, and you can pay that online with a debit or a credit card. And in an effort to assist people, too, we are currently waiving the processing fee, the 2.5%, on the credit card payments.
Oh, okay. And then what about warrants, I mean, for failure to appear? Those would not be issued.
We are not issuing any new warrants for failures to appear during this pandemic period. Those warrants that had already issued and are out on the state computer are still there, and somebody, if they get picked up for something else, may be brought in on those warrants. But we are not issuing warrants for failures to appear. And I want folks to understand one thing very clearly. The justice court's role is to be the community court. And community is common unity. And as we go forward during these difficult times, it's my judicial philosophy that we all have to give up a little something to get through this time. So if someone has a fine that's due, and you also have rent that's due, or you need food, pay your rent, buy your food. We'll still be in business when this is over, and we can settle up then. But just don't go dark on us. Call us, let us know what difficulties. We can work with anyone on those things. We don't want to issue warrants. We don't want you to go without. We just want everyone to stay safe.
And looking at the court report every week, I see a number of people who are arrested and charged who live in another county and another state. And since we are not inviting anybody into Summit County, what does that mean for them? Same thing?
Same thing. We've just sent notices to them continuing things out. So one other thing, Leslie, during this time, I know a lot of people have lost their jobs. They're either unemployed or underemployed, and they may qualify for a public defender. We'll have an affidavit available that they can fill out so that I can review those to see if they qualify for the assistance of counsel. And if so, I will go ahead and appoint counsel, give them contact information, and they can be in contact with their public defender so that during this interim period until we can get back into live hearings in June, they can still be preparing for their defense and their case. The same with out-of-state defendants if they are requesting.
All right. And I think I heard you say you're the judge that does hear misdemeanor cases, and those are like what, labeled A, B, and C?
Yes, A, B, and C, but I do not see Class A misdemeanors. They go to the district court. So my court is a misdemeanor court. We do traffic, which is infractions, Class C misdemeanors, like disorderly conduct or intoxication. And then Class B misdemeanors, the DUI, the assault, domestic violence, thefts, marijuana, those type of things. That brings me to another point. Domestic violence cases are on the rise because of the situation we find ourselves in. I will be seeing those hearings and conducting those as quickly as possible as well. But if I could just ask the community, if you know someone that may be in a situation that's not safe for them, or for their children, please have them contact the Peace House or the Justice Center so that we can get them some resources so that they don't find their way into the court.
Yeah. And I'm guessing, so this means that you would be actually the one who would hear any case of anyone cited for going around the stay-at-home order, because that's, again, what they're threatened with is a class.
Right. It is classified as a Class B misdemeanor. I would be the court that they would come to. I don't think the philosophy is that there's going to be a lot of citations. I think there's going to be a lot of information and clarification, and most importantly, cooperation by the community, and that we won't need to issue citations. But if they are issued, if somebody is conspicuously and consistently violating the order, and they are charged, then it would come before my court.
Okay. And just finally, what kind of backlog are you getting set up for here?
Well, I think that, you know, it's definitely pushing the balloon in at this end, and it's going to bubble out at the other end. That's why I am encouraging, and the clerks are encouraging, those folks that can handle their matters online to call and to see if we can. It's also my understanding that the prosecutor, both for the county attorney and the city attorney, will be reviewing cases and offering offers of compromise, which are pleas and abeyance in some cases, and we'll be communicating those. So justice will still occur. It will just occur in a very different manner than we're used to.
Yeah, interesting. And hopefully without a lot of people on the street, no one's getting into trouble. But again, please.
Well, and that's exactly it. It's a numbers game. Certainly there's more violation when there's 100,000 people in town than when we've got 40,000. So, and especially the 40,000 that are staying in their houses. So we don't expect that there will be a lot, but law enforcement is still engaged in enforcing laws. And one last item, Leslie, many folks that come into the court have a requirement for community service, particularly on a DUI. Many of the organizations that they performed community service are shut down or limited in their ability to have volunteers at this time. So if there's anyone out in the community that needs volunteers that could use community service and still practice the distancing and the safe methods, if they can contact our court, because I'd like to be able to provide community service to folks that need it during this difficult time, and allow some of these folks to meet their commitments and or apply it towards their fines, because I do allow community service towards fines.
Okay. Judge Kerr, appreciate your time again. The court is open. The number to call, 435-615-3800. And again, as she put it, don't go dark. Thanks.
Don't go dark on us. Thank you, Leslie.
8:41 now. Good morning. Well, if there's one more strange thing about 2020, it's this year's elections. As we've been reporting, we have two races for Summit County Council, seat A and seat C. No one registered to run against Oakley resident Doug Clyde, who will retain seat B. But after this past Tuesday's Democratic caucus, it became clear that by this time next week, it's delegates, not voters, who may have decided who will represent us for the next 4 years on the Summit County Council. Given that, we figured we'd better at least introduce you to those who have filed for election, because we may not get another chance. If more than 60% of the delegates who were elected on Tuesday can agree on one of these two candidates, that person goes on to serve the four-year term. If the candidates split the delegate votes, then a primary will be held June 30th when voters can choose, and the winner of that primary then goes on to serve that term again without having to go through the November election. Joining me now on the phone, I have the two candidates running for seat A, incumbent Roger Armstrong and newcomer Jill Fellow. On Tuesday, we'll be talking with those folks running for seat C. But good morning to both of you. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Leslie.
Good morning, Leslie.
Before we do introductions, maybe just a minute discussion about how you are reaching out to delegates. Again, we used to have the caucus and convention for candidates to meet up with delegates. And of course, in these days of social distancing, that is not happening. So, Jill, are you taking this digital? Are you recording messages, doing live Facebook feeds, or sending some messaging to delegates?
Yeah, thanks. Lots of phone calls. This is a great opportunity to talk one-on-one with delegates and residents of the community. These phone calls are great. They're intimate. They're one-on-one. You can really find out what people care about. I'm also using social media, like you said, recording messages and videos so that people can get to know me a little better.
Yeah. And for you, Roger, what are you doing?
Phone calls and emails. I sent on the caucus night, the night before the caucus, I sent out about 400 emails to voters, just to let them know that, you know, this was happening. This, you know, kind of cropped up all at once. We had a decent turnout, I think, of 410 people registered, and 300 some of those actually voted. So I think people were engaged or trying to be engaged. So just trying to cut through the clutter and get the message out that this was happening and that, you know, I'd like to stick around for a little bit longer.
Yeah. Jill, back to you. Tell us a little bit about yourself and why you filed for office.
Yeah, thanks. Well, first, I just want to thank Roger for his 8 years that he served and thank him for diving into the issues. This is a really precarious time for our county. So thank you, Roger, for all the time that you've taken. I don't want to sit back for 20 years and watch this county change and grow and then suddenly step up later. I really want to help now. I want to help shape this community as we become a more inclusive place, a diverse and equitable place. I really want this to be a place where new voices are how we solve problems, that we are constantly, like Roger said, engaging people. We had 400 instead of maybe the 110 we would usually have had in the caucus system. I want to take that and run with it and create a space where we bring a lot of new voices to the table. I live in Pine Brook with my husband. We have four children. I work for WGU Academy, which is part of Western Governors University, and I build programs for adult learners to increase grit and resilience. So for when people have to go back to college later in life, we make sure that that's doable for them. I chair the State Women's Caucus for the Democratic Party, and I want this community to have better leadership that represents the people who live here. And that's really one of the reasons I've put my hat in the ring. We have just so much to be proud of. People love this community, the people who live here, the people who visit. And we spend so much time, you know, maintaining our culture and building our identity. But I think something has gone wrong in the pipeline for our future leaders. Right now we have four white men and one white woman on the county council. And we have, you can tell, very few people willing to run, right? And we have 20% of our population who identify as Latinx, and we're more than 50% women. So again, where's the pipeline of leadership where we're creating a space where women and people of color are stepping up and feeling like this is part of their community and their world, and that they want to be a voice and a leader in this space. So I'm going to keep bringing up this issue in the campaign, but I'm also really dedicated to working on this problem when I take a seat on the council.
Okay, and I want to talk just a little bit.
Sure, go ahead.
I just want to talk a little bit more about that, but I'm just curious. I mean, have you been attending county council meetings? And if so, how many have you been at in these last few years?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I've been to a few in person, and then I try to follow the minutes as best I can. As you know, sometimes, you know, having to put too much volunteer time can really be a limit for opening access to these kinds of positions. So I do the best I can to keep up on the issues in creative ways. So constantly talking to people who are engaged with the issues and involved with the issues, and then using kind of the paper trail and the minutes and anything that's posted virtually to keep up on those meetings.
And Roger, I mean, if reelected, this would be your third term. Why do you need a third term?
You know, I think it's been a pleasure to work with the members of the council that I've been with for the last two terms, almost finished with the second term. We put a lot of things in motion, from transportation issues and transit issues to sustainability issues, affordable housing, and we're making inroads on all of those. I think, you know, we started focusing those efforts even tighter last year when we came up with this notion of having the county manager come up with a working plan that addresses each of those strategic goals that we have, and actually had staff sit down at the beginning of the year looking at the budget, looking at workload, to identify each of those pieces that they would be responsible for and come up with projects that would further them the most, move the needle the most. And I think that that's been really productive last year and up until this disruption that we have right now. I think we were even further on track. So, you know, the renewable energy goals with the passage of HB 411 last year, I think we're going to make great strides with that. I think the county, you know, our goal is to become 100% renewable for our county operations by 2032, 50% by 2025. And I think with HB 411, we've got a chance to possibly even accelerate that. We're changing our fleet over. There's just so much that's moving forward right now. It feels like keeping some stability on the council to continue those goals, to continue to push that forward. You've heard me say it before, I am heartbroken is the right word, that Kim Carson decided to leave. She is, if not the most effective council member that we have, she's pretty close. And she's been just the greatest partner that we've had on the council. And her leadership is going to create a vacuum and it just feels like the wrong time to have 40% of the council change over. So I'd like to keep going and see if we can continue to make the strides that we have.
Yeah. And Jill, back to you. I mean, I'm hearing a lot of chatter now that Kim Carson is leaving, that it, you know, it could be a council of older white men. So is this your platform, you know, that you're running on, that you're a woman? And I mean, why do you think that's important? I mean, and can you give me an example of how you would have voted any differently on an issue because of your gender?
Yeah, that's such a great question. It's definitely not the whole platform. The point is not just to elect me because I am a woman, but I'm also a woman who cares deeply about this equity issue, not just for women, but for all cultures. And so, again, electing me is, in effect, putting gender equity on the council, but more so, my long-term plan is to affect the council positively by diving into these issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And you ask, you know, what would I do differently? How would I vote differently? I'm not sure it's an issue of voting differently, Leslie. I think it's an issue of how we lead the staff and what we request, right? Leadership is about asking for the information, collaborating with people, and then making strong decisions. And in this situation, I'm going to be pushing for disaggregated data. I need to know how a plan we're putting together, not just how it affects the community in general, but using disaggregated data to see how does this affect women in this community? How does it affect parents, single parents, people from different cultures? And when we come at our work from this point of diversity, equity, and inclusion, we're much more open to bringing in new voices and, again, using the data in different ways.
Let's talk a little bit about how we're going to deal with what is the most serious crisis in modern times. Roger, I mean, this, again, we're going to see, how are you going to lead through this in terms of what happens? I mean, again, we're going to see revenues down, you know, we've got people out of work. How are you going to lead forward?
Well, I think you've raised an excellent point, and those have been the focus of our conversations the last few days. We're I think we have to break this down into some segments. We've got the current crisis and what's going on now. We've got people with food insecurity. We have people with health insecurity, people that could be homeless. You know, we have to pay attention to rental issues. We've got to figure out what we – this is an example. You know, I talk about all the time how counties are regulated by the state and how our powers are often limited. Counties are not allowed to regulate housing. We can't set rent controls. We can't put in place anti-eviction orders currently. So we have to work with the state to try and get relief in those regards. And I think, you know, the federal government, the stimulus bill that's coming out should have some things that will be helpful. We've got to pull together all of the tools just to contain the current situation and make sure that people are fed. Lynn Ware Peak is leading a community conversation where we have calls two or three times a week with the local nonprofits that are providing food, that are providing health care, that are addressing the needs in the community. Mental health issues right now with this shutdown are going to be at the forefront, and people like Jewish Family Services and the Christian Center and the University of Utah are continuing those operations. So I think first and foremost, we have to make sure that people don't slide too far to the extent that we can. Then we have to look at what happens when we actually turn the key back on. How do we stimulate the economy? We've asked the governor to give us some relief in terms of what we can do with TRT monies, which are normally used to promote tourism. So we've got a good bank of those right now. We might, if we can get some freedom to use those for items other than tourism, we may be able to help with immediate needs and also to seed the way going forward as businesses start up again. So we're putting together various committees. We're working with the Chamber of Commerce right now on looking on a going forward basis. Doug Clyde is involved with that. Chris Robinson is involved with that. And we had an extensive discussion recently about how to further those efforts and divide this up so that we can be effective.
Yeah. And Jill, with the prospect of Summit County facing serious economic damage, if elected, how would you figure out whether to, what, cut the budget, trim employees, or ask for a tax increase?
Yeah, that's a great question. Like Roger, I think it's critical that we tap into all the resources, both state and federal. I think our focus does have to be on using this federal relief package and understanding it, using county resources to truly understand all the options that then we can put into place in the community. I don't think this is a time to cut staff at the county level. It's definitely a time to put those people to work in maybe unique and different ways so that we can best understand all the resources that we have.
Let's talk a little bit about, you know, besides this current economic crisis that we're facing, Jill, what do you think that the three biggest issues that the council is facing?
Definitely still transportation, growth, affordable housing, lots of green initiatives. I think we do well with green initiatives, but of course, keeping our head in the game there. But yeah, growth, affordable housing, transportation, everyone I talk to is concerned about these things. People see that these things affect our county and our culture and our future, but also each of us personally and individually. So we need to continue to look at data really clearly on the growth that people want and don't want. We need to be really stealthy about looking at past contracts for development and current ones to look at our options for developing a community that has a lot of affordable housing. But also, I want to better understand how we hold the ski resorts responsible and accountable for providing housing for their employees. I want to strengthen those relationships and continue that conversation.
Yeah. And Roger, I mean, given the steps that the county council has taken with regard to green initiatives, I mean, given what the future of the economy may be look like, what if developers do say, you know what, we can't afford to do these green building features or put in affordable housing? I mean, what's the response to that?
Well, I mean, we still have to stick with our primary goals. I think we're going to be at the mercy of the economy. We have standards in place in terms of affordable housing and fee in lieu. You know, I assume we can take a look at anything as it comes up, but I don't know that we want to divert too far from the goals of this community. It's going to take some time to recover. I don't think we've ever seen a slowdown like this. You know, this is an abrupt halt due to an acute crisis. And if this crisis resolves relatively quickly, then, you know, it may be that the economy gets back on its feet a little bit sooner than it did in 2008, which was a larger systemic problem. If this is a combination of this acute, you know, cause from the virus, plus a more chronic issue in the economy, and it takes a little bit longer, then I think we're going to have to adjust. So right now, it's difficult to figure out exactly what we're going to have to do, because I don't know that we know that this is going to be a short-term ramp-up or if it's going to be a slightly longer slog like it was after 2008. But I think, you know, again, we've got some pretty good minds on the council. We've got a remarkable staff working for the county now. When I came in, you know, conversations that we had with Bob Jasper at that time were, go out and find the best staff that you can for the money that you can pay them. And he did that. And then Tom Fisher came in, and he's continued that. And top to bottom, from economic development, sustainability, our transportation people, our planning people, we've got people that are incredibly thoughtful. They're remarkably responsive. That was one of the things we set as a goal coming in, that we're a service business and we need to be responsible and responsive to people when they come in. And so we've reduced wait times for people. We tend to get back to people quickly on concerns. All of the council people that I work with tend to be very responsive to residents and citizens when they email us about concerns.
Okay. You know what?
That'll be part of that process.
All right. I have just about 30 seconds for each of you. I guess, Roger, tell us why delegates should vote for you coming April 1st.
I think experience is necessary, and it's good for the county. It's good for the residents. It's good for our goals. I'd like to continue on with this. I think we have a good plan in place. I'd like to continue to help implement that, and I think both the experience and the work experience and skill sets that I have lend myself to continuing on. I'd like to continue to serve you as a council person.
All right. And Jill Fellow, again, what are you telling delegates why they should vote for you?
Yeah, I think new voices are important. We get to use the experience and the wisdom that Roger gave us for 8 years, and we can build on that. We can infuse these current goals and these current initiatives with new perspectives. And that is critical in all times, both scary times like now and also the future when we'll rise.
Okay. This is going to be really interesting. I think, again, you have to receive at more than 60% of the delegate votes on Wednesday, again, April 1st. If, again, nobody makes that split, then we'll go on to see a June 30th primary. And at that point, I guess the decision is made. I want to thank you both for just acting really quickly and joining us this morning. We appreciate that you making it happen.
Thanks, Leslie. I want to
thanks
correct
so much,
that, by
Leslie.
The way. I think the convention is April 2nd, not April 1st, just to make sure people vote the right day.
Okay. I had heard that they're getting ballots April 1st and have to have them returned April 2nd. So, okay.
There you go.
All right. Okay. Hey, thanks again. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.